I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to Pixels, a show where we talk about the video game news from the past couple of weeks. We analyze it, we summarize it, we funify it. Well, video games are already fun, so we try to make you have a fun 90 minutes or so where we summarize everything important that's been happening in the world of gaming. My name is Patrick Beja, and today, to help me navigate the waters of Amazon and Twitch and esports and sports and Forza is our very own Garrett Weintraub. How is it going, sir?
Oh, it's great, man. Can we just talk about Forza, though? That's like, other than WoW, that's like the only thing I've been playing lately.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to discussing that game, because it's sort of, to me, as people know, I'm not such a big fan of racing games anymore, so they all sort of blur together a little bit. And so I almost, it's not that I discounted Forza Horizon 3 so much as I didn't pay a lot of attention to it. I thought, yeah, well, there's a Forza game, either sports or Horizon, almost every year. And everyone's been telling me that Horizon 3 is awesome. So
it's a good time. We can wait and talk yeah. about that until it's in the rundown. But I've been having a good time with it. And you're not alone. I really enjoy racing games, but I don't do a show about them. So they also kind of just, it's like, oh, it's out, I guess I'll get it. That's about as far as my research into racing games go.
Well, this one apparently has a lot of good things going for it. So we'll definitely dive into that a little bit later in the show. But first, oh my God, was there an explosion of Amazon twitchiness at TwitchCon. For those who don't know, TwitchCon was this weekend, and the second edition of the convention. It's kind of a Forza Horizon 3 situation for me, because I didn't really pay too much attention to it. I'm not huge into Twitch. Been watching it more and more for sure over the past couple of years. But last year's TwitchCon was mostly, Twitch community thing, which was celebrating the streamers and that kind of thing. But it didn't seem like there was a lot of announcements and things like that. So I didn't think I was going to pay a lot of attention to it, but there was massive news out there, and we're going to talk about Amazon Game Studios' own announcements, which mainly are the Breakaway game, in a little bit. But first, the Twitch Prime announcement. For those who haven't heard, basically Amazon Prime now encompasses Twitch Prime, which itself replaces the Turbo subscription for Twitch, and offers the same perks and some additional things. Basically, you don't get ads anymore. You get goodies for your games every month. The first one is a character for Hearthstone and a bunch of other things. Obviously, Hearthstone is the highest profile one. And it allows you to support every month. You have to go and re-subscribe, basically, but support one streamer every month, and you have to re-up your subscription for that person or someone else every month. So it is, again, I mentioned it, but it is included in Amazon Prime. If you already have it, you already have Twitch Prime. And this, to me, for a number of reasons, seemed like a huge announcement. And it sort of makes me understand why Amazon even bought Twitch. But I want to get your take on it as well. What's What do you think of that Twitch Prime business?
I think it's great. I'm very much in a similar boat to you, Patrick. I'm not the world's biggest Twitch user. For me and my purposes, it's just kind of there as a place to stream the recording of my podcast live, and that's about as far as I take it. But I mean, just really nothing but good, I think, for Twitch and for folks like me who already just happen to have an Amazon Prime subscription, and kind of forgot, oh yeah, Amazon bought that, didn't they? That's kind of where my head was at. So of course I linked up immediately, got myself the Tyrande hero portrait for Hearthstone, cause who the heck wants Anduin? for me, that's kind of as far as it goes. I think it's great that I get to support a streamer of my choice every month. They get, you know, a little kickback from my Amazon Prime subscription. I would be curious if this is enough to actually get more gamers to opt into Amazon Prime that weren't already Amazon Prime customers, because Prime is pretty expensive nowadays.
I wouldn't say so. I think if you look at Prime, you know, for one of the things it offers, it might be a little bit expensive, but it's getting to a level where, you know, it offers so many small things that it's kind of not worth it not to have it, almost, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I love Prime, but I'm also finally making money a little bit, like, past the point where I can afford to not just live off ramen for the first time in my life. But I like when I think of like the Twitch demographic and a lot of kids in college, I don't know. I definitely did not have the money for Prime when it was significantly cheaper when I was in college, let alone what it costs nowadays.
Well, you know, maybe, yes, of course, there are going to be some people for whom the $60 a year is too much. But I think there are a lot of people, especially on Twitch, who didn't really think the turbo premium offering of Twitch was really worth it. And if you throw in all of the things that Prime offers, if you have a modicum of disposable income, it sort of makes sense. And especially, I mean, again, all of these things taken individually, the Prime Video, the Prime Music, the next day delivery for free, and the Twitch supporting someone, I think it's really cool. That alone is going to encourage some people to do it. And then the goodies, all of that put together, it makes a super compelling offer. I'm not saying that everyone's going to do it, but really, I don't see anyone, you know, in my environment, any of the friends we have, any of the listeners we have, unless you can't afford it, which means you're really a student, you know, or you're kind of poor. There's no reason not to get it if you have that small amount of disposable income of $5 a month. I think it does two things. First of all, it clarifies the offering of the premium offering for Twitch, which is, you know, important because Turbo was kind of obscure, and this makes it clear, and it brings a lot more for the people who do it with the little goodies. And it brings in a lot of people into the Amazon fold, which Amazon Prime doesn't really need to make a lot of money. But if it fidelizes, it makes the customers of Amazon prefer to shop on Amazon. Obviously, if you have the Prime thing, you're going to be bringing preferring Amazon over other outlets if the thing is available on Amazon, and most things are. So
yes,
that's really big, I think, for Amazon. And it also brings in a huge influx of supporters to Twitch streamers. I mean, the numbers, anecdotally, from my friends and the people who do use Twitch, they've been telling me, and it's the announcement, it's the beginning, so maybe it will level off, but they've been telling me things are crazy. Things have been crazy in the past few days. It makes you give someone money for free, basically. And that's huge for those streamers, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like I said at the beginning, I think this is nothing but positive. There's really not, I can't find, I struggle to find a negative here. Maybe if you just don't like the new Twitch layout, that's a negative thing for you, but that's about as far as it goes. I think, this is absolutely great. And you're right. It's basically like, here, you can give someone money for free. I'm it's another one of those things. I know we'll never see the stat, but I'm curious how many people of Prime who actually are Twitch users that will forget about that and just not sub to someone. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or sub to someone even in the first place, because it's not like it's required. It doesn't require you to go and hit that button. It's just one more kind of bullet point on the list of perks when you link your Twitch account to your Amazon Prime account.
Right. And the thing is, those things aren't, my understanding is, it's not auto-renew. So if you don't, even for someone you support for free, you have to do it again the next month. So that is a little bit of an uncertainty factor in the offering, which I think streamers that are seeing big numbers now might want to pay attention to, because you need to have people come back and do it again every month. And some people are not going to do it. They're just going to forget.
Yeah, absolutely. So if that is the case, which is my understanding as well, is that every month you have to opt back in, even though, you're still going to have your Prime account. That is absolutely, I think, something to be concerned about as a Twitch streamer. I kind of wish it just stayed on whatever channel you subscribed to until you decide to move it.
Right. And I think that's the trick as well for Amazon. It's like, yeah, we it's a little extra, but you have to put in a little bit of effort for it. So the people who aren't really engaged in that world of Twitch are not going to be providing support in the long run. But
And obviously there's ways that they can, kind of poke you. They can send you an email reminding you, oh, hey, your subscription fell off, or be sure to use your one free Twitch subscription this month. But how many people just move past stuff like that thinking it's spam anyway?
Yeah, I think we're going to see I think it's kind of clever, actually. It pushes engagement, and we're going to see a lot of streamers saying, hey, if your Amazon subscription is up, maybe you might want to think about, helping me out. And you just have an easy button there.
Yeah, Patrick, because that's what I want. More call to actions in my YouTube and Twitch videos. Sounds great. Comment below.
That's true. Okay. But, I agree. I think that is really important for Amazon. And beyond Twitch, it basically brings into the fold of Prime, and as we said, a faithful customer, a lot of the people on Twitch, because the actual audience on Twitch that watches Twitch on a regular basis, I imagine there's at least half of them who would be interested in an Amazon Prime subscription with all of those perks. The video thing might not be the best one. You'd prefer Netflix, and the audio thing is not Spotify, but all of them put together. Anyway, especially with the Twitch thing. I mean, that is possibly, for people like us, the best part of it.
Yeah. No, it's just one more thing on the value pile that is Twitch Prime or Amazon Prime. Oh, look at me, already confusing brands.
And so there's also, talking about Amazon, I want to talk about some numbers they discussed at TwitchCon at the keynote, but we're going to do this just after having talked about the Amazon Game Studios announcement. So they announced a couple of games, two of them we didn't have a lot of details on. There's one MMO type thing and one, was it an FPS? I think, but the announcements were really scarce on details for those. However, they did detail one game called Breakaway, which to me puts into focus the other reason why they purchased Twitch a while back, which is basically they're all in on esports. I think that game is just one example of how important they think esports is going to be in the future. They didn't buy Twitch, and that might be obvious. People are going to say, well, of course, duh, Patrick, you're an idiot, which I might be. I agree. But it's kind of, they didn't buy Twitch for what it is now. They're thinking esports is going to be a major, portion of entertainment in the next few years, and Twitch is going to be the place for that. Again, you have brand fidelity, loyalty rather, with that Twitch Prime thing, and they're cleaning it up. And so that game, Breakaway, is, how to describe it? It's sort of an arena, and I don't want to say MOBA, but every game where you control one character in a team and that character has special abilities is kind of a MOBA nowadays. So it's a third-person arena where you have two goals and five players' teams, I believe, and you can grab a ball and you have to get the ball in the at the end of the field. And if you grab the ball, you can't use your abilities, but you can throw the ball. And if you don't have the ball, you have different characters, obviously, that have different abilities. There's a couple of crystals. One of them increases the damage. One of them increases defense. And you can go for them, and you have to do a certain amount of damage to one of the crystals there on the side to benefit from that buff for the duration of the round. And so there's an interesting sports-like mechanic happening there. Do you, you know, strategy, do you go for the crystals, do you go straight for the goal, do you you know, and you build your team with different kinds of characters. And I thought there's also a lot of Twitch integration thought through from the beginning of the development, with you can invite people following you on Twitch to play with you. You can easily broadcast everything, obviously, from within the game. You have some sort of in-game currency that you can wager on matches if you want to. And that doesn't, to my understanding, translate to actual real-world money. It's only in-game stuff, so it stays clean or clean-ish, etc., etc. And I thought that was a, I don't know if the game is going to be any good. Obviously, you can't, you know, bet that the thing is going to be big if the core gameplay isn't good. But I thought that was a super clever way of tying things together. And I think the game looks interesting. And Garrett, apparently you hate it more than death itself.
I don't hate it more than death itself. Okay. No. As a first
a little bit of a hyperbole there.
As a first entry by a new game studio, it looks polished, it looks slick, but to me this looks like it was developed in the most sterile lab ever for the sole purpose of feeding on every buzzword that has ever been uttered in the name of esports.
Well, I agree. I think that's true, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing. I mean, it's certainly a game developed for esports, even more than esports. It's developed for Twitch. But you don't think it might be fun to have that? The thing that strikes me is that it's a game that seems like it's understandable by someone who doesn't really know video games, but who knows sports.
Yes. And that's, I guess that's a bigger philosophical question, because that doesn't interest me at all. I don't care about that. I come from, you know, I'm going to get old man on my porch. I come from esports, where the game was built because someone wanted to make a game. And the fact that it was competitive and actually fun to watch was almost an accident.
So are we getting into old man, I liked it before it was cool territory kind of thing?
No, I'm getting into, I'd rather you make a game because it's a game you want to make, not because you see, this is the percentage that esports have grown in the last 3 years.
Okay, I can see that. And actually, to an extent, I agree. I think the game could be good in spite of that. But I'm wondering, what if that title is sort of a gateway drug into esports for people who like sports? Like, what if Amazon looked at the landscape of esports now and thought, the biggest problem we have is that people just don't understand what the hell is happening, because the thing is too foreign for most regular people, between quotes. And let's develop a property that will allow the people who enjoy sports to do that transition, to look at something that looks a little bit more familiar, and they will be brought into the fold of the esports lovers. Maybe it's not going to be for, you know, the sports people who are older and who like to just, you know, who have been going to the same bar for 30 years to cheer on the same team. Those people might not be interested, but maybe younger people who aren't that much into video games and esports might be brought, you know, might be intrigued by something like this when they wouldn't have been by something more confusing.
Yeah, I mean, that's all very possible. I think it's definitely a possibility. And the only way you're going to find that out is by putting this out there and seeing how it does. My counter argument to that, and again, we're just going to have to see how it pans out, is right. That this looks boring to me. It's a, it looks like a carbon copy of Paladin, Smite, and Overwatch all had the most, you know, kind of unenthusiastic child you can think of, and they added a ball. If I'm going to I totally understand where you're coming from saying that to the outsider, games that are played competitively, a lot of esports out there right now are relatively impenetrable. Completely agree with you. But my counterpoint is I don't watch esports because I want to see something that's more similar to traditional sports and something I can wrap my head around with an understanding of traditional sports growing up with those traditional sports on TV. I want to see, you know, something that I can't see in real life. I can see someone throw a ball around in real life. As a matter of fact, I have a lot of options with that. I already have an option with that in esports, and it's called Rocket League, and it looks way more interesting than this.
Right. I guess, yeah, this really looks like the illegitimate love child of League of Legends, Rocket League, and some of the one of the millions of arena FPS shooters that we have nowadays. So yeah, it definitely looks like something that was, you know, I don't know why, but for some reason, it looks to me, I look at this in a more positive light, even though it has the same list of bullet points that, you know, what do we need to make a successful game that will work for that segment? Then, you know, it has the same approach than a AAA open world, you know, carbon copy, whatever game that we see every Christmas. But for some reason, this one, I look at it in a more positive light. I don't know why, but it's certainly
I think a lot of it does come down to personal taste. And I will be the first to admit that this just, like, I just don't care because they're throwing around a ball. Like, also,
you're
why is there a pirate
allergic
a cowboy?
To balls is what you're saying.
Yeah. Also, why is there a pirate and a cowboy? I don't know. Probably because they saw a cowboy in Overwatch, even though it's future, and they thought, hey, people like weird genre mashups.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, yeah, there's some inspiration there. But I guess, it will all rest on whether or not the game is actually good and actually fun. And maybe, I mean, it's one of the first serious games. They had some mobile thing before. It's one of the first serious games from the Amazon Game Studios. It would be surprising if it was awesome from the first try. But I guess we'll have to see. What's even more interesting than all of this to me is what it means, in my opinion, about Amazon and Twitch and their huge bet on esports, and the potential direction where it's going with the integration of streaming and interaction. I think it's not the first game that is doing interaction with the audience, but I think there's something there which it's doing better, and that it's the first one at really exploring, which is, yeah, video games can be played alone, they can be played together, they can be played with an audience, and the next step could be to interact with the audience in a way that, you know, maybe we fantasized about a couple of decades ago. Like, what if there's someone watching and you can actually bring them into your game and you can interact with them within the game, not just in chat. And that is something that everyone was thinking about in the beginning, and that hasn't really materialized. And I'm wondering if it won't do that. So yeah, and the fact that, you know, esports, as we're going to see in a little bit, is getting some recognition. So Amazon is I think betting on that in the long run too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's your first, I think it's the first point you have hit on the subject of Breakaway that I have no counterpoint to.
Yeah. All right. That's good. A couple of numbers from TwitchCon again, before we move on to sports. The viewers average on Twitch this year has been of over 600,000 people watching the site concurrently, which is pretty amazing. The highest number of people watching the thing at the same time, watching Twitch at the same time, was 2 million. 2 million peak. I mean, that is a significant player in the media. And now, of course, there are, you know, lots of streamers. Actually, 2.25 million people. That can't be right, is it? Did I write it wrong.
That seems right to me.
Yeah, 2.25 million people were streaming at some point or another during the year, and they have 17,000 partners. So that's very impressive numbers, and it's been growing significantly. Now, something a little bit more fun is the top games, the top new games for the year, the top new releases or titles. The first one, unsurprisingly, I think, is Overwatch, and to our delight, because we enjoy that game very much.
The first game that comes out, the top game on Twitch is also the game that the Amazon's making kind of totally freaking looks like? Yeah.
It looks a little bit like it. I wouldn't say, well...
I would say it looks a lot of bit like it. That dude looks like Reinhardt with no sci-fi. That guy looks like McCree with a slightly different skin tone.
To an extent. The second one, though, is World of Warcraft Legion. Now, that's not a new title, but it's a new release. Most watched new release of 2016, Legion? I would never have guessed. I mean, it's the second one, second place, but I would never have guessed that ever.
Yeah, I wouldn't have either. This surprised me entirely.
Yeah. There's a bunch of others. Destiny Rise of Iron is number 3, and it only just came out. The Division, number 4, a number of others. But Clash Royale is number 9. And I think that, by the way, number 10, Stardew Valley. What? I mean, it's a very successful game, but watching it on Twitch,
I want to see other people's farms.
I guess so, yeah. Why not?
All right, let's put it this way. I understand checking out Stardew Valley videos on YouTube. I don't understand watching someone live stream it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are weird things on Twitch, but...
It's the internet, Patrick. You could just say there's weird things on the internet, and Twitch exists on the internet, so... therefore...
transitive property, right.
Yes, there are strange things on Twitch.
But Clash Royale is number 9, and obviously I think that's significant because, as you know, it's a mobile game. And number 9 is again, it's not number 9 overall. It's number 9 of new releases of 2016. But Clash Royale was built for competitiveness, and I think there's a core of excellent gameplay in there. But that is an example of something that was built for it with the flavor of the day, with the cards and all of this. But that is being successful, and it's a mobile game. And some people have been poo-pooing mobile games.
You can say me.
Have you been?
I hate this game. I hate Clash Royale. I hate the style. I hate everything about it. And it's proof that the fact that I think something can be developed in a lab specifically for something doesn't necessarily mean it won't also be wildly successful.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was developed in a lab to an extent. You can see the... I don't like the graphical style of the game, but that's, I guess, personal. But it was certainly developed with the idea of let's make it a good game that also is pleasing to the day's flavor. So
yes, yeah, absolutely. No, it's a very well-made game that I cannot stand.
Yeah, well, lots of people watch it, and it's a mobile game, so I think that's significant in its own right.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Okay. The last thing I wanted to mention about TwitchCon is that they made no mention of the issue of toxicity in chat, which. Understandable, you know, you don't want to rain on your own parade, so I understand why they didn't start bringing up the horrible.
Are you really surprised at all that this wasn't brought up? Because I'm not.
No, I mean, I don't want to say I'm surprised. I guess I'm more disappointed that it, and maybe it was discussed in a side panel at some point. Maybe it was, but I would have liked for them to not say, hey, there are horrible people chatting on our service, but rather say, you know, here are the steps we're taking. Here's where we think we can take the service or make these changes to make community management easier or, you know, to facilitate these kinds of, you know, but they didn't mention anything about it. And I think there was an opportunity to show that they're working on it, I guess. But
I absolutely agree. They're not alone, though. They're not the only large outlet having issues with vitriol.
With the internet.
To questionable degrees. Twitter's been, you know, in the limelight for all the wrong reasons a lot lately as well.
Right.
At some point, someone needs to, you know, one of these large companies that is an outlet for this vitriol do need to step up to the plate and lead the charge against it. And no one has yet. And honestly, I'd like the lack of it is just making me think for Twitch and similar companies don't know how they should talk about
it. Yeah, it is definitely a difficult issue to solve for sure. But I mean, yeah, it was a celebration. They were gonna sour it, but I would have liked them to mention something.
I would have as well, Patrick.
All right, let's move on to as I was saying, sports or sports bowl, the real sports invading esports again. And so there were a couple of bits of news, basically one day after the other, where the 76ers announced that they, it's a team from, what is it?
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, there you go. They acquired Team Dignitas and Apex. I hadn't heard about Apex, but Team Dignitas is definitely a feature, a fixture even of the esports world. And right the next day, Team Liquid has basically been acquired or partially sold to a group that includes a lot of actors from the sports world. Magic Johnson is one of the names that rings a bell for people outside the U.S. There's a lot of other people that people in the U.S. will know, I'm sure. Ted Leonsis, Peter Guber, a bunch of other people, basically people who are into real sports. And so yeah, you're the one who is into esports and who lived in the US. Those probably speak to you a little bit more. How big a deal is it? How significant is it? Do you care even? I'm curious.
I mean, it's like me personally, again, I mean, this is where, like, is this something I'm really excited about? No, but it's huge for esports. This is just one more layer of added legitimacy to the scene, that you have an entity like the 76ers picking up not one but two esports teams. I mean, it's huge. But I mean, I also thought it was just a matter of time. I mean, we've talked a lot of this episode about trends, about buzzwords, about its effect on the world of gaming, and this is just one more of those outcomes, right? I mean, esports has just been growing kind of nonstop. We've seen multiple tournaments now on traditional cable outlets and channels. We just had a massive Overwatch tournament on TBS this past Friday.
How big is TBS for people who aren't in the U.S.? Is it like a regular network?
Yes, it is a basic cable station. If you have TV really of any, like at any level, you probably get TBS.
So was it broadcast in the middle of the night? Was it prime time?
It was late enough that it did make my traditional sports loving wife go, why is it so late? It was 10 p.m. My time zone, but that means it was 9 a little bit west, 8 a little bit further west, and 7 for the West Coast. So
it was prime time for part of the country.
Yeah. To me, I look at that and I think they were just trying to split the difference between all the you know, major time zones in the U.S. Although I'm not aware if it was, I can't imagine that it was time delayed for the different. It's not like it's not like, you know, Breaking Bad or something. This is a live event, so I would assume it would be right. You know, broadcast live to all time zones in the U.S.
Yeah, this is definitely, I mean, it's been growing, but it seems like yesterday, maybe it was 6 months or a year ago, where we had that big blowout of some douche on ESPN saying something along the lines of, if, you know, esports
Colin Cowherd, just ignore him.
Okay, no, but I mean, the thing that, and again, I'm outside the U.S. for this, so maybe I perceived it in a different way, but at the time that he said it, it was, again, 6 months to a year ago.
It was after Heroes of the Dorm last year. Not this year. It was Heroes of the Dorm 2015.
So it was a year and a half ago almost. Wow. Felt like less than that. But basically he said, you know, something along the lines of if those stupid computer games are on ESPN, I'd rather not work for ESPN or something like that. Or from my cold dead hands or something to that effect. And at the time, what struck me was that at the time, That seemed like it certainly wasn't the opinion of everyone in the sports world, but it felt like it didn't sound strange. You know, esports were kind of this thing people were looking at sideways and going like, really? You watch people playing games? And, you know, that was kind of the mood, the ambiance, if you will, around this. And fast forward a year and a half later, and sports team are buying esports team left and right. People like serious athletes with cred are getting in on this. It seems fast. It seems like things have moved really fast, even though, you know, they seem slow to us who enjoy these things. But seems really fast to me.
Yeah, for whatever reasons, didn't really come as a huge surprise to me, because esports has just been growing. The money is clearly there when you look at some of these premier tournaments. And I mean, Dignitas is a team that is well-known across just about every, you know, popular esport. Apex is a very well-known League of Legends team. So these are two teams that are steeped in some of the biggest money tournaments out there. And then Team Liquid as well. I mean, following that up, they're, you know, another esports pedigree.
I guess you're sort of hitting the nail on the head there. When you're talking about money, I guess they realize, and they had a few trial runs with ESPN2 and Heroes of the Dorm and a bunch of other tournaments, and looking at the audiences that these tournaments generate. And they're thinking, you know, sports are not going anywhere, but maybe they're the average age of the, you know, the demographic for regular sports is getting older, slowly, but still. And this is a way of getting people in, not even in sports, but getting an audience for our properties that is a little bit younger and grabbing all of. And certainly, I don't think they're going to be making lots of money yet, but in a couple of years, 3 years, maybe we're going to see all of these big tournaments on TV with big sponsors in the way that we see regular sports today. And it's starting, as you're saying. Again, a year and a half ago, Heroes of the Dorm on ESPN was an oddity. Now we've had a bunch of those, and TBS just broadcast a few days ago the Overwatch thing. So. Yeah, it's getting there.
I mean, you can still go on Twitch on, you know, Dirt like live while Heroes of the Dorm is on ESPN. You can read all of the hilarious outbursts from people who are like, "Oh my god, I just switched to ESPN. What is this? You know, why is there a right. dragon?" when they're clearly talking about Diablo, who guys is actual demon from hell? He's the devil. He's not a dragon. Calm down.
It's so much better. He's just the devil from the burning hells.
That's actually the devil. No. But yeah, I mean, this can to me, this can all be tied directly in to all the statistics you just rambled off about Twitch. I think TBS, more so than being interested in the money from esports, I think is more interested in moving, you know, kind of future proofing themselves. They're seeing these statistics from online streaming, and you know, now I think it has worked in TBS's, has worked in Turner's interest that they've, you know, they have these, they have E-League, they have CS:GO multiple weeks out of the year on their channel, but they're also streaming all the preliminary rounds online. You know, Turner is now getting brand recognition in the streaming space where previously they were not.
Interesting. So did you watch the TBS thing? What did you think? How was it?
It was fantastic, Patrick. If you really? Goodness gracious, dude, go watch it. Have you not seen it?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it was so well done. Hey, you know how we were talking about, and we'll talk a lot about this on Overwatch, as I'm sure, but you know how we were concerned that it was going to be difficult to watch and it was going to be a lot of first person Genji flipping around?
Yes.
There was a lot of fixed camera angles pulled out around like team fight hotspots, and I loved it.
Really? Okay. Yeah. So they're sort of getting the hang of it, is what you're saying.
Yes. The camera work for the Overwatch Open Finals, I thought was phenomenal.
You know, my esports site of choice, Esports Red, is not updated again. I think they're they're not updating it. It's a lot of work, and it's
almost like it's a fan project run by, I believe, two people.
Yeah, exactly.
It's understandable.
It was really, and so, but you know, it's the kind of thing you want to use. Like for me, in my case, once every couple of weeks. But they need to make sure that it's updated all the time. Like there are tournaments all the time, and obviously it's a lot of work. But so I guess I'll try and hunt it down. What exactly was the name of that tournament, so I can find it?
Overwatch Open.
Oh, it's the Overwatch Open. The Overwatch Open. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I'll find that. I'll go watch the finals. Excellent.
Yeah. The finals were this past Friday, and
don't spoil it.
Yeah. No. That's fine. I'm just saying the production was off the chain.
All right, cool. Excellent.
There was once a chain, and the production was off of it.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you very much. I guess it is indeed a good time for esports. We've been talking about it, I mean, everywhere in the gaming world for a year or so. We've seen the signs, and it's a year and a half, I would say, even. We were saying that esports is ready to go big, and some people are telling us, you know, well, it's already big, Twitch, blah blah blah. And yes, it's big. It's not big, like it's not real world big, it's gaming world big. And it even in the gaming world, I think there are a lot of gamers, as we often say, that are not esports fan, that could become esports fan if it was a little bit more better put together. And that seems like it's starting to happen. So exciting stuff. All right, let's move on from the big news and talk about some of the smaller stuff, some of which are the releases for the past few days and weeks. One of them is Forza Horizon 3, as we discussed at the beginning of the show, which I didn't pay too much attention to because, as I said, I'm not a big esports. I'm not a big racing game fan. Racing games, I think, to me, probably feel like fighting games feel to a lot of our listeners. When I go on and on about how awesome some of the fighting games are, some of them don't really know them, and they're like, oh, okay, that's just like the other one you discussed last week.
You took my opening comparison.
Oh, damn it.
I think racing games are to me what fighting games are to you, and that your reaction to racing games is what my reaction to fighting games is, which is not for me.
So why should I pay attention to Forza Horizon 3 more than I do to the other, you know, couple of fighting game racing games that come out every year?
Well, to be honest with you, if you don't like racing games, I don't think you should.
Really? Because people have been telling me, well, okay, if I hate racing games, obviously I shouldn't. But, you know, I used to play Gran Turismo back in the day. I was a huge Ridge Racer fan. You know, I did play racing games, but it's
just... that case.
Yeah, so I think...
In that case, definitely pick up Horizon 3.
All right, so why? Why is it better than the other ones?
All right, so I didn't keep up with Horizon 3. Forza is probably now my favorite racing game. I used to be more of a Need for Speed fan. I like my racers arcadey, but not over-the-top arcadey. I'm also a huge Burnout fan, which I do think if you hate racing games, you should play Burnout.
I like Burnout. I liked Need for Speed Underground 1 and 2, yep. Those kinds of things where it's still, you know, it's not... I used to play, as I said, Gran Turismo, so I can appreciate the realism in some of them, but usually it's more like, yeah, let's drive fast and have fun.
Yeah, exactly. And put neons and giant spoilers that actually would just make my front-wheel drive car heavier and not any more aerodynamic. But that's kind of, if you're wondering where my racing game tastes are, that's where it generally falls. I stayed away from Forza for a long time because, when I was younger, I didn't really enjoy Gran Turismo. I'm sure I would enjoy it now with a proper racing wheel setup, but it was something I never enjoyed with a controller. and I stayed away from Forza thinking that it was basically that, and it can be. The thing that when I originally got into Forza that blew me away was the fact that you can kind of just take your difficulty slider, and depending on where it is, it kind of affects how semi it is versus how arcadey it is.
Is that the case? Because there are two series for Forza, right? There's Forza, yes, there's Motorsports, and Horizon.
Yeah, exactly. I just say Forza. I just say the numbered versions because I forget that Motorsports comes after Forza. Like a lot of times people just say Forza 6. Okay, right. That's the new numbered Forza. And that's definitely a more sterile, you know, you're racing on named tracks that actually exist in the world. You can go run the Nürburgring if you want. Whereas Horizon is the more outlandish versions of the game. They have an overworld. They take place in fictionalized versions of ideal locations you would want to go drive a car. In the case of Horizon 3, it's Australia.
It's and basically that, open world. It's Assassin's Creed for cars, isn't it? Or is that?
I guess. I mean, it's an open world game. I'm not the Assassin's Creed isn't right. the one I jump to, but sure. Why not? I mean, the all of that kind of went into my not really paying attention to Horizon 3 because I figured it would just be another number in that there wouldn't be a whole lot of new features. It would just be a new country, a new fictionalized version of a real country to go drive around in. And honestly, in a way that it is, there's not really any new groundbreaking features. It's very similar to Horizon 2. What I underestimated was just how much enjoyment they can inject into a new Forza just through the quality of the world they designed. And Australia in Horizon 3 is the most fun I've ever had driving around anything with a car.
Wow. So is it the best car fun car game you've ever played?
It's hard for me to ever take that away from Burnout because there was something special about Burnout, and it's also tied up in nostalgia for me. But in terms of a game where the goal is not to make the most elaborate car crashes possible, I'm really enjoying Horizon 3, and I just want to drive around its world because there's such a large variety. If you want street racing, it's there. If you want drift racing, it's there. If you want rally racing, it's there. If you want rally drift racing, you can do that.
So, but how does it actually happen in the world for someone who's never played it? I played just a tiny little bit of it for Horizon 2, I think, and didn't really love it. But so you just drive to a location and then an event starts? Or how does it actually happen? How does it take place from almost an interface point of view or, interaction with the game point of view?
Well, like any open world game, there's a ton of random things to do, and you can kind of take your pick. I mean, if you just want to follow the story, all of the events are very clearly marked on your map, and you can even fast travel. It costs credits in game, so there's a bit of a gate to it. But really, I mean, if you're winning races, you could fast travel to every event and never once actually kind of go and explore the open world if you really wanted to.
But so the interface, basically, that means you have a map, an overall map of the entire continent, and then you have little dots that appear throughout the map, and you can go there if you want to do that thing. The dot, the icon represents a certain type of event, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. And how does the multiplayer thing play into it?
I haven't honestly experienced a ton of it yet. So far, my experience with it has been identical to my experience with 2, which is mostly downloading car builds and looks. And you see the horrible buzzword drivatars all over your game.
For those who don't know, the drivatars are, horrible name. But it's basically a profile of one of your Xbox Live friends that gets robotized and you drive against them.
That's the thing. I remember hearing it announced. I don't even remember what Forza it was at this point where they announced Drivatars, and I thought it was the stupidest name for anything ever, and I still stand by that. But I actually like it in the game. Like, I actually think it is well executed upon.
So you don't have to be online at the same time as your friends, but you see their Drivatar and you race against them. Has that happened to you?
Yes. Constantly. The racers in every single one of my races, always a few that are on my friends list that I recognize.
Huh. And so can it actually happen with someone who is live at the same time as you are? I'm guessing.
You can choose to race together. As a matter of fact, all of Horizon 3 is playable. Like, you can play through the campaign in co-op. You can play with a friend and go do the whole campaign together.
So it doesn't seem like, as you were saying, it doesn't seem like there's one, breakout new feature that makes it awesome. It's more that everything's so well executed and they're so used to doing it now that they've perfected their craft. And so it's just, would you say it's fun from, like, it's just the fun permeates from it better than it did?
Yeah. Basically, everyone I've talked to who's been kind of on the fence, I basically asked, hey, do you like Forza? Did you enjoy The Last Horizon? Well, I think this is the best Forza game. Mm. Like, it's not And it's funny because I've spent my whole life kind of crapping on Madden games being a $60 roster update every year. But I do think to a certain degree that Horizon 3 still puts more effort in than a Madden each year, because at least they created this entire Australian environment, which didn't exist in the previous game. But to a certain degree, I kind of get it now. Like, okay, I mean, how much more can you really do with a car game? You know, obviously, somewhat at some point is going to come out with a cool new feature, a cool new way, or a new spin to put on a racing game. But for what Forza is, and specifically what the Horizon series is, I think this is the best entry into the Forza Horizon series that I've played.
Okay, cool. Well, that makes me want to go play it a little bit. I don't know if I'll be able to, because there are so many things. I'm don't have access to my consoles right now, and when I will, I'm gonna get the PlayStation VR, which, you know, maybe that's gonna take me half an hour, and then I'll put it down and I'll be done. But then I'll have to play Rise of Iron, which is the other title that just came out, and that is getting not great reviews. I think the problem with Rise of Iron, Destiny Rise of Iron, is that it's basically more of the same. It's a new zone, as you know, similar to the one from The Taken King, which I loved, and I'm sure I'm gonna have a lot of fun in Rise of Iron, but really it's a stopgap until Destiny 2 comes out next year. So I'll have more to say about Rise of Iron when I've played it in a couple of weeks. But for now, it's just what you would expect, I suppose.
Yeah, I haven't found the time to play it, sadly. I love when Destiny gets new content, but it's been hard to find the time. Somehow I found time to play Forza. I didn't think I was going to, but I guess I'm just a little more excited about that than Destiny at the moment.
Yeah, it's easy to not be excited about Destiny, and to complete, you know, as much as I raved about The Taken King last year, and I encouraged everyone to try it out because it was an excellent game, unlike the original vanilla Destiny, which I still loved but understood why people wouldn't. I think this one is entirely skippable. It's only $30, is it? Rise of Iron. It's 30 or 40 bucks, I can't remember. It's not a full price game, and it's not a full game for sure. So I think if you're going to skip one, that would be the one. And I'm very, very, very curious to see what's going to happen with Destiny 2 next year. And I think that's where people need to start paying attention again. So, and by the way, Destiny 2 is probably going to be coming out on PC as well. There's rumors.
Wait, what?
There. Yeah.
What? Well, I'm hearing news for the first time on this podcast.
I can't tell if you're being
I'm being 100% sincere. This is blowing my mind right now. If this is actually true,
well, the big question
thank
is
God. Please be true.
I don't. You know, I really enjoyed playing with a controller in ways that, for example, after having played Overwatch with mouse and keyboard, the controller was like, I tried for 15 minutes and was like, all right, never.
Patrick, it's a PC. You can play it on whatever the hell you
That's
want.
True.
You can play with a damn plastic guitar if you really want to.
No, because if it's calibrated for mouse and keyboard on the PC, then you need to play with mouse and keyboard. If you don't have auto aim like you do on consoles.
To. Yeah, just get good with a controller, man. Get good.
Yeah, without auto aim, good luck getting good with a controller. That is really challenging.
Okay, as long as you're not doing PvP, I'm sure you can manage.
Maybe.
Well, actually, I don't know. Some of the harder runs on certain instances is kind of rough, but I get your concern. But my biggest issue with Destiny is that half of my friends play on Xbox, half of them play on PlayStation, and right now all I want to play is World of Warcraft, which scratches the same itch. So.
Well, with Destiny 2, you'll have a third of your friends on Xbox, a third of your friends on PlayStation, and a third of your friends on PC.
And these specific friends, the majority would just be on PC.
Possibly, yeah.
Except my one Xbox friend, Ben, who's an Apple user. Sorry, Ben, stop using Apple products, please.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, for Destiny, people might stay on the console they started on. I guess we'll see next year. October, it's here, and there are games coming out. We're entering the giant period of the holidays where everything is available that we have been waiting for a long time.
You made it through the summer drought, Patrick.
Exactly. Well, summer drought there was a bunch of things that kept me busy. I would say.
Well, that's because we're Blizzard fans, Patrick. That's true. We are the chosen few that aligned ourselves with the correct game studio.
Well, if you didn't, you might be waiting for Mafia 3 to come out. It's coming out in a few days now, just three. The one thing I will note about Mafia 3 is that the press outlets are not getting copies of Mafia 3 for review. And a few months, years ago, I would have said that's suspicious because usually you don't want bad reviews to come out before the game. And so you don't give out review copies to the press. In recent months, though, there have been a few games that didn't get that treatment because they had a good buzz going on. And they the only thing that you could make happen by having advanced copies would be bad buzz. In some cases, the bad buzz could tarnish the release. But it didn't happen for some of the games, namely Fallout 4 and Doom 3, or Doom, I guess, not 3, were both titles that, if I remember correctly, didn't have advanced copies for press and turned out to be really good games. So I'm not sure what it means that Mafia 3, 2K is not sending review copies to the press. But it is kind of suspicious. I'm not sure why. And we haven't seen a lot about the game. So, as usual, I think I would recommend that you wait. If you want to buy the game, just wait for the reviews just in case. A couple of days after it's out. On the 10th, 100-foot robot golf is coming out. And for the life of me, I don't understand why people are anticipating that game.
Let's see. I spent the top of the show crapping all over a game that took characters from a MOBA and made them throw a ball around. I'm a lot more interested in just watching normal golf, but with giant robots.
I guess when you put it like that, why not? The big release is on the 11th, Gears of War 4, which it has its fans. We'll see what happens with the fourth.
Yeah, I really liked the first two Gears, and I'm pretty indifferent to the series at this point.
Yeah, same for me, which is really too bad because, we could talk about God of War again, God of War 4, and the unfavorable comparison we had at E3 this year. But you know what? Let's be happy. Gears of War 4 might be good. This is a wait and see for me. It's not an instant buy. And then it's about a week away now. The PlayStation VR is coming out. A bunch of games are being announced at this point, but the most important part is that it's coming with a demo disc. Woohoo! Demo discs are back. Everyone's been having fun with that.
So, go steal them from the magazines in your grocery aisle.
22nd, and obviously PSVR is going to be probably a big part of the next show we're going to do because we'll have tested it. Battlefield 1 and Civilization 6 are coming out on the 22nd. The expansion for Dark Souls 3 is coming out on the 23rd. The Ashes of Ariandel. I'm not a Dark Souls player, sorry.
I'm sure it's a made-up word. It's okay to pronounce it wrong.
Thank you. And then on the 28th, Titanfall 2, which...
Yeah!
Really?
Yeah, I love Titanfall.
Wow!
I really enjoyed the first Titanfall. I thought I was going to.
How long did you play it?
About 3 months.
Oh, well, that's pretty good. I played for a couple of weeks, loved it for a couple of weeks, but didn't last longer. 3 months is a good run for multiplayer game.
I think it was the most I've enjoyed multiplayer console shooter since Halo 3.
Wow. Okay, did you try the beta when it was available?
I did. What oh, did for you two, no.
Oh, for yeah, one, yeah, yes. For two. Mm.
Okay. No, I haven't tried it for two.
Okay, well, that's good to hear some positive stuff about Titanfall for a change. And then we'll see what happens with the single player, which is the we've seen a couple of trailers. Could be fun if there are some big set pieces, cinematic moments as there were in Modern Warfare 1 and 2. All right, bunch of other bits of news. Battleborn is apparently becoming a free-to-play game fairly soon. That is not very surprising. Very poorly,
yeah,
unfortunately.
Yeah, let's continue the smack talk. I still don't care.
Well, yeah, it's... we've talked about Battleborn in the past. No need to be mean. But yeah, unfortunately, it didn't do as
fun.
Well as...
Yeah.
Meh. Paladins, I've played it at the very beginning of the beta, but it's available on beta on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. If you want to give it a try, it is... It's a... When I played it, which is admittedly a long time ago, it was a bad photocopy of, again, buzzwords and features, Overwatch and a MOBA bunched together with some cards from Hearthstone, and kind of bland, I thought. But again, it was a very long time ago. It might have gotten better in the last year. So it's available on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. You can go try it for free. Dragon Quest Builders is getting a demo on PlayStation 4 and Vita, and if you like Dragon Quest and Minecraft, then that game is for you. Looks kind of fun. I think I'm going to give it a try.
This was not on my radar, but that little tagline sounds just crazy interesting to me.
Well, you know, what it comes from is Dragon Quest. I mean, Minecraft is incredibly popular in Japan, as it is everywhere. But it's basically been sustaining the PlayStation Vita by itself. It's keeping the Vita alive there because it's selling so well. And Dragon Quest basically came out with the series came out with their version of Minecraft. It really is. You know, the PR people are going to tell you, well, no, it's about this and that. And it's a little bit different for sure. But when you look at it after 2 seconds, you realize that's basically what it is. And it seems a little bit more guided, a little bit more easy to approach than Minecraft. So there's a demo available for free. Why not try it? Persona 5 sold pretty well, 500K in its first week in Japan. That's significantly more than similar games or, you know, RPGs that came out in the same, you know, that sold when you look at the numbers in the same time frame. So in the past few months. So yeah, Persona 5 doing well. That is good news to me. I'm eagerly anticipating its release on in the West. No Man's Sky is under investigation. There's a false advertising claim for that game, which, wow, that thing is never gonna die, is it? People are so angry about No Man's Sky. I don't get it. Why so much anger?
But well, that's because you're generally a level-headed human being, Patrick.
Maybe, I guess. But going all the way to...
I don't either. I was disappointed with the game, but I think it was an interesting proof of concept. I think it was worth my $60. I'm glad to support the studio.
Yeah. I think the specific claim is about the video on the Steam page compared to the game, because the video was an early promo video that showed things that didn't make it to the final game, which I understand on paper, like technically this might be false advertising, but it really feels like something disgruntled, angry players found, you know, as the one reason they could legitimately bring a claim against the studio, which
they
I
basically
think is...
are taking that video that's all over Facebook of about, you know, what was promised versus what we got on No Man's Sky, and they're trying to build a lawsuit out of it.
Basically, well, yeah. So the thing is, that video, the video with the original vision with the big dinosaur walking around and all of this, was apparently on the product page on Steam, and still when the game came out, so people could reasonably claim, I guess, that they saw this, they figured, oh, this looks awesome, and then they launched the game, and they don't have that, which they saw in the video. So I understand technically, but yeah.
I'm going to start a lawsuit against Sony for false advertising for the first Spider-Man movie, because that scene where it traps a helicopter between the Twin Towers is not in the actual film.
Wasn't it?
No, it was not. That, that was removed from the original Sam Raimi Spider-Man.
After the... Right, of course, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. For obvious, very, very sad reasons. But,
right.
This is just really bitter. gamers. To me, it's hard for me to wrap my head around this. I'm just like, why are you so angry?
Yeah,
what were you truly expect? So the dinosaurs look a little, you know, silly. Deal with it.
I think that is what comes out of this for me as well. It's really like, wow, you're so angry. You must be like, you must need love so much. you really weren't hugged enough when you were young, weren't you? That is what comes out of this thing for me. So,
yep. And I'm an angry person. I get angry at video games all the time. I don't get
and
this.
And yet, there's a lawsuit for Pokemon Go as well. Let's just not even delve into it.
Oh, for God's sake!
Yeah. Now let's not get Garrett angrier than he already is. PlayStation Experience is happening on December 3rd, so that's kind of cool. And we have the Game Awards on December 1st. I'm looking forward to it. I know it's not always great, but I really enjoy it. Nintendo won't be at Paris Games Week in about a month. That is kind of a bummer, because we're getting to the point where it's like, guys, where is the NX? It's supposed to come out in March. At some point, you have to say something about it. And yeah, I would have thought we would have something about it at this point, but apparently, no.
It's been a rough year for Nintendo. I'm sure they're very concerned about their messaging.
Yeah, for sure. And at this point, the problem is the lack of messaging is kind of doing the messaging for them. Everyone's going to buy an NX, I think. A lot of people are going to buy an NX, whether or not they talk about it. The problem is the people who aren't already certain they want to buy the NX, no matter what it is, need to be convinced, and they need to have their excitement drummed up. And you can't just start talking about it in 3 months and then put the console out a couple of months later and expect that it's going to do super well. So the time window, I think, is not closing, but I mean, who am I kidding? Everyone's going to be aware of it once they announce it. But
I'm about to say, that was going to be my counterpoint. Can they? I think they can. They're Nintendo. It's a new console. I think they can do that. It's not scheduled to come out before Christmas. I can understand a lack of a push.
Maybe they want to let the Christmas season go by, or the excitement, and then start talking about it. But then there are a lot of people who are going to buy consoles at Christmas that would maybe have otherwise waited for the NX and not bought a PlayStation Slim or an Xbox One S.
I think that's a bit of a judgment call, isn't it? Because I mean, it could work against you too. Your hype could be drowned out by things people can actually buy for this holiday season. Just as easily as, you might be able to actually stop a few people, get them to abstain from purchasing a console.
Well, I guess maybe. But then if you don't have the console that you're promising and the messaging out, then you're definitely not stopping anyone from buying a $300 console and then thinking, well, I just bought one, I'm not going to buy another one 3 months later. So,
fair enough.
I don't know.
I don't know. I think for for Nintendo, I mean, and if you're selling any console, you're trying to, it all comes down, I think, to the general populace. I think gamers, people who are going to buy this, the people who are in the know about Nintendo are going to buy this console one way or the other. I think, getting, like my mom to buy it for my little brother, that's not going to happen in March, no matter what Nintendo does.
Right, so you're saying they don't need to worry about it now anyway. The faithful are going to buy it in March, and then the regular people, they're going to be buying it maybe later in the year, even at Christmas.
That's where my head is at. Mm. But I might be, I don't know. I might be putting too much weight into the casual parent purchase. Who knows?
Maybe. Yeah, and maybe they're not ready. Maybe they're going to push it past March, which would blow my mind because of fiscal reasons, but we'll see.
I'm just glad it's not the GameCube all over again for me personally. This is the most selfish joy I've ever had around Nintendo, because I bought the GameCube solely for Twilight Princess, and they moved that straight to Wii. I know it came in on GameCube as well, but it was hard to find a copy, and I was pretty miffed about that. And
so
I almost bought a Wii U.
Oh, right,
I almost bought a Wii U for that new Zelda game, And I, oh no, it's just, it's going to be on this and the NX. And it's like, cool, I'm skipping the Wii U entirely. Thank you for telling me, Nintendo.
You and millions of other people. Yeah. All right, last little bit of the show. I guess first, the Oculus Touch controllers are apparently going to be $200 or €200 in Europe. And that is an expensive bit of tech, and it brings the Oculus to the level of the price level, the price range of the Vive, which is definitely pretty expensive. And I had a chance to test the Oculus finally. It's available for testing at my local retail store here in Paris. And I have to say that my first impression is not incredible. It's technically more competent than the PlayStation VR for sure, but it didn't feel mind-blowing. Like, it's not I was all of a sudden in a realistic environment. It still felt video gamey, and I did see the pixels on the screen. It wasn't high resolution enough that at, you know, 2 centimeters I didn't see the pixels, and I didn't have any mind-blowing experience. I'm part of the, you know, 50% of people, I guess, that aren't, you know, I don't know. We'll see once I have the PlayStation VR at home. I can test it a little bit longer to see if that works. But what it told me for the Oculus is that the effect that VR has works on the PlayStation VR, even though it is inferior hardware. The fact that it's lag-free, it sort of confirmed this idea that the fact that it's lag-free, when you move your head, the images move at the exact time you move your head, and that does the immersion, even though the graphics are not awesome. And for the test I had of the Oculus, it was only 20 minutes, so maybe, you know, things change when you use it for longer. But what it told me was the graphics and the resolution of the screen aren't what make or break VR. What makes or breaks VR is the feeling of being there, which stems from the lag freeness and the refresh rate of the screen, rather than the graphical details you have on the images. So
makes sense to me. That sounds like, I feel like any type of lag would just be really kind of off-putting, and I'm sure if you're prone to motion sickness in any way, shape, or form, I'm sure it doesn't help with that.
Yeah, that is definitely, I mean, that's the barf machine immediately. If you think you barf in VR, then if you have lag or not a great frame rate, barf times 10. But what struck me with the Oculus is that it was a beast of a PC connected to it, and the graphics didn't change the feeling of immersion. So we'll see. We'll see. Answer next week when we all, you know, the regular people who don't have $1,000 to put into the headset can try it with a lot of games coming to the PlayStation VR. So we'll see at that point. So the last bit of news connected to the PlayStation VR, or rather to the Oculus Rift, is that story of... This is not my political show, The Phileas Club, so we're not going to be talking about politics too much. But
I wish it was, because that show is like this nice little dose of sanity for me living in the U.S. with this freaking election right now. But it wears off after about a day or two.
Well, you know what? I'm very glad. Thank you for that lovely compliment. And go listen to The Phileas Club if you want to hear sensible people talk about sensitive topics. This still affects the video game world. And if we talk a little bit about politics, I mean, if you're allergic to these kinds of things, thank you very much for listening until now. You can turn the show off. But I, you know, I'm pretty level-headed, and I don't think I go into the extremes that some people do. So anyway, it is a gaming story. Palmer Luckey was found to have funded and participated into an organization that is promoting the candidacy of Donald Trump against clearly the candidacy of Hillary Clinton through means that are, I think, pretty objectively objectionable, even if you think the other side does the same. Well, first of all, I don't think they go that. Well, maybe. I don't know. But even if you think the other side does the same, this is not an awesome way of expressing your political message. Basically, it's an organization called Nimble America that was trying to... that was posting memes and shit posts about Hillary Clinton, which were really... I tried to find them. I didn't find many of them, which is the biggest mystery to me in this whole thing. The organization is supposedly a meme machine working for political purposes, and it got some donations, a bunch of money from Palmer Luckey and others, you know, and regular people. But I haven't been able to find any results of what they've done. Maybe it's because they're being drowned by the news. But that is, to me, the bigger mystery. There was one meme which I saw, which was basically too big to jail, with a picture of a deformed head of Hillary Clinton. And one of the other one, which I think was Nimble America as well, was the only man she ever got off, with a text about a criminal that she got off when she was a lawyer, and she was making light of the fact that she managed to get him off on a technicality or something like that. And obviously it's, you know, the only man she ever got off is a pretty lewd play on words. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Welcome to this year's election.
And so the reason this became news is that Palmer Luckey represents, to an extent, Oculus and its parent company, Facebook. And he was funding this thing and talking as with an alias of Nimble Rich Man on Reddit. And he was funding this organization, which, honestly, it's not so much that they're advocating for Donald Trump. But the way they're doing it is, I mean, I would have a lot to say about Trump as a whole. I think there are a lot of issues with the campaign of Trump. I'm outing myself here, you know, as a dirty, horrible mainstream media liberal, if that's the way you want to look at it. But aside from that, even that, the mission statement of that, association, that organization, made me feel dirty. You know, it's, they're doing it through memes and shitposting, and the few I've seen were sexist, and maybe, again, maybe there are the similar ones on the other side. That doesn't justify the fact that, I don't know, it's all, it makes me feel dirty, all of it. And the question is, should that affect your the consideration you have for Oculus, and should you, you know, how do you react if the boss of Oculus is associated with them? He distanced himself from it with a statement that was pretty well written, very, very short, very matter of fact, and then he stopped talking about it entirely. My guess is Mark Zuckerberg called him in and said, "What the fuck is happening? We are going to put this to rest right now. We don't need that kind of controversy." And he got his PR people on it, and they drafted a statement, and he put it up on his Facebook page, and that was it. And they managed to kill the story, more or less. But
yeah, I mean, that's, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think the big discussion here is how much should this affect Oculus? And at the end of the day, I just feel bad for everyone at Oculus other than Palmer Luckey, like everyone on the team. Like, this kind of sucks for them. You know, whether they agree with Palmer Luckey or not, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's such murky water here, right? Cause I mean, Mark Zuckerberg has been quite outspoken in his opposition to Trump. It's hard not to now look at Oculus and think of this. And honestly, I think you should remove yourself from this in terms of Oculus, because like Oculus is not just Palmer Luckey. It is not only him. It is a large company with many, many employees. And I don't think they should all be punished for one man.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it does play into it, but I think what hurts even more, I mean, what really hurts, if Lucky had said, you know, I'm not for Clinton, I think Donald Trump is the wild card that we need in our political system, and he will, you know, whatever. There are lots of reasonable arguments to make for Trump. As much as it hurts me to say it, I think there are lots of reasonable arguments to make against him, but I understand the arguments that go for his candidacy in the political climate of any Western world country right now. If he had said things like that, I think it would have been a lot harder to, I mean, it wouldn't have initiated the controversy that is happening right now with, or that has happened in the past couple of weeks with, a number of teams stating that they are dropping support, development teams, I mean, dropping support for the Oculus, which admittedly is not a huge financial risk because the brunt of the money in the VR space, I think, is going to be made on PlayStation VR. So it's not like, you know, they're sacrificing themselves either. But if he had just said, yeah, I'm for Trump for these reasons, it would have been more or less fine, I think. The manner in which he's doing it, and if you go read his posts on Reddit and things like that, it's basically trolling. And the way he's spinning it in the statement, which is, you know, I'm trying to explore new ways of engaging young people in the political process, holds in isolation. But when you look at what that organization, Nimble America, you know, the way they talk about it, and there's awful people like Milo, you know, who he is, if you know who he is, involved in this, and the way he talks about it, it's really trolling. Like, it's taking trolling and trying to legitimize it for fallacious reasons, I think. And that is where it hurts. To me, at least. It's not so much the political opinion. Again, the people who listen to the Phileas Club know that I'm really for reasonable, level-headed discussions about all forms of political opinions, even the ones that might anger you, whoever you are the most, whether you're on the left side or the right side of the aisle. But the manner in which he discusses this and the manner in which he tries to put it together, the problem is I didn't think about this until now, but we were talking about toxicity on Twitch just before, and this kind of communication is not trying to find new ways of engaging the young people. It's reveling in toxicity. And that is what trolls do. And it makes me sad that this young, very rich, successful man would engage in something like that. And it makes me sad and angry at the same time, because I think this is, in many ways, the worst of, and I'm not talking about the political system here, it's the worst of the internet. You know, there are amazing, wonderful things on the internet. There are some super funny memes. There is some incredibly clever people on Reddit. And then you have the trolls and the shitposting and all of that. And that is not something I would like anyone to aspire to. And he's sort of encouraging it when you have pom-pom girls
cheerleading?
Cheerleading for it, yeah. And it's, so that's why
I completely agree with you, but that's the inherent baffling part of this entire discussion to me and to you, right? Because this is, we see this as, of course, like, this is awful, this is underhanded, this is, like you said, reveling in toxicity. But to a certain number of the populace, this is the reason they're interested in a certain candidate. This is the straight talk that they want. This is the non-political behavior that they enjoy. It's hard to divorce myself from this, from taking a political stance, because apparently now memes have become political. and it's hard to have the discussion. And to that, Whether you think that, they're just stating the truth or whatever, if you think that's, lands you on a certain side of the aisle, to me, this just comes down to the issue with all of this shit talking behind a wall of anonymity. Go out in the world, behave like this in person to someone's face. See how far that gets you in your job, in your personal relations, and see how many teeth you have left in your head afterwards.
Well, I think the ironic thing, and we're talking about the internet in general now, I think the ironic thing is most people who would do these kinds of things on the internet wouldn't do it in real life, right?
And that is the exactly what I'm getting to.
Right,
and that's
right.
That's why I take so much issue with trolling, because at least the bullies in school have the balls to do it to someone's face, and they put themselves at risk by acting this way. If you're doing it from behind a monitor, you are to the extreme level of cowardice that I run out of words to quantify the level of human shit that I think you are.
Wow, the angry nerd came out. Which, yeah, I understand in this context, it's definitely the point at which it would. So yeah, I guess we're pretty much aligned on that issue, and I think to summarize, the problem isn't as much with the message itself as the format, which is again encouraging trolling and bullying and that kind of toxicity that we try every day to fight. So it's disheartening to see these kinds of things happen. And I think that's why the reaction to his involvement in it was pretty allergic and pretty quick. So,
Yeah. To tie up my thoughts, I find Palmer Luckey repulsive, but I don't think it should affect my purchasing decision of an Oculus.
Right. Yeah, I think that makes sense. All right, and that is going to be it for our show. If you want more about more from Garrett and myself, you could, for example, listen to Overwatchers, which we're recording tomorrow, October 5th. And we're going to be talking about... Yeah, March is... Yeah.
Someone's looking forward to the NX.
Exactly, that's what I was going to say. And we'll be talking about, I'm guessing, the Open... The tournament that I'm going to watch the finals of right now. And a bunch of other things. I went through the season 2 placement and I have stuff to say. So anyway, that is Overwatchers that you can listen to on its own podcast feed. But also, Garrett is available in these fine productions.
Indeed. Everything's at amove.tv. Go to amove.tv. Check it out. Jocelyn and I just posted our fifth and final episode of Embrace the Spoilers for WoW Legion. We talked about Saramar. And we've been enjoying talking WoW so much, we're just going to continue talking WoW every Monday from here on out. So we're kind of splitting it off into just a little WoW show. We haven't named it yet. Don't have a name for that. But just keep your eyes on amove.tv and follow me on Twitter at GarrettArt.
Fantastic. I am Patrick Beja. You can find me at NotPatrick on Twitter. You can find my shows at FrenchSpin.com. This one, of course, Pixels, and the one that we mentioned a couple of times during this show, the Phileas Club, which is a show where we talk about political and international news topics with people from different countries, different cultures, different backgrounds, and always try to keep level-headed arguments in play. And yes, we managed to do that about the most difficult topics, like the U.S. election, for example, or the Brexit, or the Burkini issue in France in the past few months. So if you think that talking about politics without getting angry or without getting into a fight is impossible, I assure you it is not impossible, and we do it on the Phileas Club on a regular basis. So go listen to that. And on top of it, we have a good time doing it, and it's a lot of fun to do the show. So go check that out if you're interested. And aside from that, we'll be back in a couple of weeks with a bunch of news, but among, I think, the main one is going to be our impressions on the PlayStation VR. So look forward to that, and talk to you then. Bye, everyone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.